The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So last week I introduced this idea of questioning as part of the practice. So we can have questions about the practice, we can have it about the teacher, the teachings, or even about ourselves. So ideas about, well, does this teacher really know what he or she is talking about? Do they really have a meditation practice? Have they experienced all these things or what they're talking about? Or are they just reading from a book? We could have doubts about the teachings. Is this right, this idea that clinging to suffering or clinging to things leads to suffering? This Eightfold Path, all this right concentration, right mindfulness, is that really going to make my life better? And we can also have questions about ourselves. Can I do this? That's, I think, like this, a real fundamental question is, maybe it's okay for other people, but maybe it's not okay for me, or maybe I can't even do it. So we can have questions about the practice, but we can also have questioning as a way to practice. So questioning is a way to kind of get engaged with the material. The antidote to doubt is to start asking questions. If you don't know about this teacher, if you don't know about the teachings, or if you feel yourself hesitating or having vacillation, unsure if this is the right practice, ask questions. You can ask yourself, what am I unsure about? What is it that's causing me to hesitate or to be unsure about this, not want to commit in some way, you know, have more than just one foot into the practice? Or if we're unsure about the teachings, we can ask other people, we can read Dharma books, we can ask the teacher. We could also ask other people about the teacher or go meet other teachers, find one that perhaps we feel more comfortable with. But questioning as an antidote to doubt is also part of investigation. So it can be the way to get engaged with what's happening. We can ask, you know, what is this? What's happening? What is this right now? So I talked about that a little bit more last week. And then this week, I'd like to talk about what are some questions that the Buddha didn't answer. So people brought him some questions and he didn't answer them. And in particular, it's done by a person who had a lot of doubt about the Buddha. So it's a story of a monk. And this monk's name was Malunkyaputta. It's kind of an awkward name, right, in English, but Malunkyaputta had ordained, and the story is that he was meditating and he had this idea, it rose in his mind, oh, I have these questions, and the Buddha has never answered them. If he doesn't answer them, I'm going to disrobe and go find another spiritual practice. Right? He wanted the teacher to be able to answer some of the questions that he had. I'm not going to tell you exactly what the questions are right now. I will, but right now I'll say that these are not uncommon. You know, they're worded in a way, you know, thousands of years ago, but we have contemporary versions of these questions now. And I'll also say that these questions that Malunkyaputta had were like a standard set of questions that not only are, Buddhist practitioners may have, but we have them in the sacred literature of other traditions from that time. So this was kind of like, you know, the usual, like in ancient India at this time, these were questions that people had. So Malunkyaputta said, maybe rightly so, you know, this Buddha person has never answered these questions. I want an answer. And if I don't get an answer, I'm going to disrobe. I'm going to leave this spiritual practice. So he asks the Buddha these 10 questions. Then at the end of asking all these questions, he says to him, to the Buddha, it is straightforward if one does not know and does not see to just say, I do not know, I do not see. So Malunkyaputta has the suspicion that the Buddha doesn't know. And he's saying, well, if you don't know, just say it. Just let me know that you don't know. And then I'll probably disrobe, but I just want to know. Do you know? So the Malunkyaputta thought, well, the Buddha doesn't know. So I'm going to divert a little bit from this story and go to some other discourses that the Buddha gave about knowing and what the Buddha did know and what he didn't know. So one is the simile of the handful of leaves. Some of you may be familiar with this expression, handful of leaves, partly because here at IMC, we used to distribute these books called A Handful of Leaves. And they were a collection of teachings that Tenisiro Bhikkhu, a translator, had translated. And he took that title from these books, from this little story. And it'll make more sense when I tell you the story. So the Buddha was standing in a grove, and he took a few leaves in his hand, and he was holding these leaves up, and he addressed the monks, and he says, what do you think? What is more numerous, these few leaves that I'm holding in my hand, or the number of leaves in the grove here? And it's not a trick question. It's pretty straightforward. The monks answer, the leaves that you have taken up are few, but those that are in the grove are numerous. And the Buddha continues, so too, the things I have directly known but have not taught are numerous, while the things I have known and taught are few. So the Buddha is making it clear that he actually knows a lot. In this statement, he's not saying he's omniscient. He's saying he knows a lot. But he's only choosing to teach a subset of what he knows. And he continues, why have I not taught you these many things? Because they are unbeneficial, do not support the spiritual life, do not lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace. They do not lead to knowledge, direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to awakening. Maybe I'll unpack that for a little bit. So he's saying that he doesn't want to teach all these things that he starts with unbeneficial, that aren't helpful and don't support the spiritual life. Right? The Buddha was a spiritual teacher. This was his life, was what it was about. He had this mission, and he's going to help people with their spiritual life. He's not interested in helping them in things. Maybe a contemporary equivalent would be something like figuring out how to get your phone to sync up with your computer, right? Something like this. It's not something that the spiritual teacher is kind of like interested in. This may be a legitimate question that you have, but it's not something that you would go to a spiritual teacher for. And the Buddha continues, they do not lead to disenchantment, dispassion, cessation, and peace. Disenchantment, dispassion, cessation is they don't help us let go of these ideas that happiness, well-being, the lasting sources of happiness and well-being are found by things out there. Dispassion is like letting go of this conviction we have that if I just hold on to this thing tightly, this passion that I have, it's going to make me happy. Disenchantment is letting go of the spell of thinking that pleasure is going to be a lasting source of happiness. And sometimes we're under the spell of, as soon as I have the perfect relationship, the perfect job, the perfect meditation experience, you know, whatever it can be. And he says, and they do not lead to direct knowledge. This is a key thing, that the Buddha's teachings are about so much about direct knowledge, just knowing for ourselves, experiencing things for ourselves, being present for our lives, being present for our meditation experiences. And they don't lead to enlightenment and nibbana. Nibbana, enlightenment being synonyms. So the Buddha says, okay, I only taught you these few things. I have not taught you all these things because they're unbeneficial. But what have I taught? It gives a little summary. I've taught this is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. You may recognize that as the Four Noble Truths. It's kind of a summary of this leads to freedom, this doesn't lead to freedom. It's kind of a Dhyana's summary of the Four Noble Truths. So the Buddha readily acknowledges that, yes, he knows more than he's teaching. In addition, in a different teaching, he says, there are four areas. Many of you maybe know, right? There's all these lists. So here's one more list. We have the Four Noble Truths, and we have these four areas that would lead to madness or frustration if one tried to understand them. So he's also saying, okay, I know some things, I haven't taught them, they're unbeneficial, but there's some things I'm not talking about because they would lead to madness or frustration. I'm kind of curious about this, right? Well, what are these things? We'll have to maybe use our imagination to understand this. So here's one of the things that the Buddha thinks will lead to madness or frustration if we try to understand the Buddha range of the Buddhas. Okay. I'm not sure what this means. Some commentaries talk about to understand the spiritual might of a Buddha. I feel like, okay, so maybe I don't understand, right? He's had some awakening experience that I haven't had. I'm not a Buddha. So maybe there's some things there that's just incomprehensible with the type of mind that I have. Maybe if you guys aren't Buddhas, the type of minds that you have. So the Buddha range of the Buddhas and the jhana range of a person in jhana. So jhana are concentration states. So when a person is in these deep concentration states, there's usually eight different ones, that to really understand what their mind is like is difficult to understand if you haven't had that experience yourself. The same thing with Buddhas, right? So if you haven't had meditative experiences, it's difficult to know about them. This we can understand, right? If you haven't ever eaten a guava, it's difficult to understand what really is eating a guava like. Same idea. The third one is that may cause madness and frustration are the results of karma. This may be a little bit surprising because this is a Buddhist teaching that, you know, of karma, that causes have consequences. But right, all of us have this experience that karma isn't mechanistic. I do this, and then I know exactly what the consequence is going to be, that exact thing, right? It's complicated. I practice loving kindness, I practice compassion, but maybe, you know, other people don't change their way that they behave towards me, or I end up having all this anger instead, or, right? So there's other factors that influence things. It's not completely mechanistic. So trying to understand all the different factors causes frustration. It's more the general idea. There are consequences to our actions. We don't always know exactly what they're going to be and when those consequences will arise, but there are consequences. And then the fourth area that leads to madness or frustration is speculation about the cosmos. You know, I'm fascinated by this. And astronomy, we keep on finding there's bigger universes and black holes and gravity waves. And I'm not a physical scientist, so these are things that I don't know about. But I'm always interested to hear that it seems like, you know, there's always more and more. And did it start here? And how did it start? And what's the size of it? Right? We don't really know. No, right? We have data and the scientists are telling us things, but there's so much that we don't know. So Malunkyaputta, getting back to the story, he maybe hadn't heard these talks by the Buddha. So he didn't know that the Buddha had said, there's so much more that I hadn't talked about that I actually do know. So Malunkya Buddha asks these 10 questions, and the Buddha still doesn't answer them. He chooses not to answer them, and instead he gives a teaching. This teaching that I've heard in different settings, kind of like this simile of the poisoned arrow. And it goes like this. So the Buddha says to the Malunkya Buddha, it's just as if a man were wounded with an arrow thickly smeared with poison. His friends, companions, kinsmen, and relatives would provide him with a doctor. But the man would say, no, 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 I won't have this arrow removed until I know whether the person who wounded me was a noble warrior, a Brahmin, a merchant, or a worker. So what class did the person who wounded him come from? The name of the person? Whether the person was tall, medium, or short? Whether the person who shot me, their skin color was dark, ruddy brown, or golden colored? What was their home village? What was the bow made out of? What was the bowstring made out of? What was the shaft made out of? What was the feathers? What kind of feathers? What kind of arrowhead? Right? So we can imagine this is ridiculous. Right? What? Here's somebody who's about to die. Not only have they been shot, but it's a poisoned arrow. The doctor is right there. There is a cure. But this person is saying, no, no, no. I want to know all this information. I just want my curiosity satisfied before I will allow somebody to help me, cure me, take this arrow out, probably cut it out or something. Maybe painful of what the doctor is about to do. So in some ways, this is, some questions that we ask, some of these things that we concern ourselves could be likened to this. We find ourselves in pain, and we're worried about, the arrow that was made out of, that is striking us, was it made from, there's a number of lists here, it says, was it from the sinew of an ox, a water buffalo, a deer, or a monkey, right? These types of questions, which are irrelevant. And the Buddha continues. Assuming that Malunkya Buddha, if he ordained, that he wants to be devoted to this spiritual life, he wants to find some answers to his spiritual questions, the Buddha continues. Whether the answer is X or whether the answer is Y, the Buddha doesn't say X or Y, he goes through the list, but whether it's X or Y, there is still sickness, aging, death. There is still sorrow, lamentation, grief, and despair. There is still sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair, and the destruction of which I prescribe here and now. Right, so the Buddha is saying, not only time would pass while you're trying to answer these other questions and you have this arrow stuck in you and you could die, but even if time didn't pass and you immediately knew all the answers, Google could give you the answer to all those questions, it doesn't address that there is still pain, lamentation, sickness, grief, and despair. So the Buddha says to the Malunkya Buddha, remember what I have declared, what I have taught, and remember what I have not declared, which questions I have not answered. And I am not answering these questions because they are unbeneficial, do not belong to the fundamentals of this spiritual life, do not lead to disenchantment, dispassion, cessation, and peace. They do not lead to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. But remember what I have declared, what I have taught, and I have taught This is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Actually, I find this teaching very important because to think about what am I filling up my mind with? What little avenues am I going down when I find myself stuck on the internet? Clicking on this and then clicking on that and then clicking on this, right? And then I'm like pursuing these things that just we could ask ourselves, does this help us in our life, in our big picture? I'm not saying there isn't a place. Sometimes escapism can be healthy. We need to get out of some compulsive thinking and there can be some healthy. But to just watch, what are we, especially with now that we have phones, many of us, and we can just with Google ask all our questions, are we filling up our lives with just the answer to questions that maybe don't matter? And that could be part of our practice, is to investigate what types of questions. I don't want to say don't ask questions. It's nice to know the weather. It's nice to know things that are happening. But I am saying just bring some awareness to this. Just bring some discernment to this. Does this support me? Is it beneficial for me? Is it beneficial for others? Does this support my spiritual life? Turning this from my professional life, my family life? Or am I going down routes that aren't beneficial? Maybe it just leads to more and more craving. Maybe it just leads to more and more aversion. Things that don't support us. Okay, so what are these 10 questions that the Buddha doesn't answer? And as I said, these were questions that were common at this time, but we could reword them a little bit and they'd be for this contemporary time too. Is the world eternal? Is the world not eternal? So the word world sometimes gets translated as cosmos or universe or planet. So this idea of time, is it eternal? That also could go time the other direction, the beginning. A creation story. Where did it start? Where did it end? So these types of questions. Is the world eternal? Is the world not eternal? Is the world finite? Is the world infinite? So rather than time, asking about space. How big is the universe? How did it start? You know, this kind of these questions of the cosmos, the world. You know, the answer we have today is different than the answer they had 100 years ago. I'm sure 100 years from now, they probably will have a different answer. I know some astronomers, this is their profession, their livelihood, to look at these things. I don't want to discount that. But if we are thinking that we need to know this is to support our spiritual life, that's different. If we need to understand kind of the cosmos and how it started or how it ended. So then the next set of questions is the jiva the same as the body or is it different than the body? So jiva gets translated as a number of different things. The life principle, the soul, the self. Often self is a different word, but so is it the same as the body or different than the body? That could have been a legitimate question. But it can also mean what happens after the body dies? Is there this life principles, their essence inside it that continues, or does it not continue? Right? So these are some questions they had in ancient India, and we can see that people have these questions here now today. And the next set of questions, does a Buddha exist after death? Does a Buddha not exist after death? Does the Buddha both exist and not exist after death? Does a Buddha neither exist nor exist after death? This is an idea of a tetralemma, so there's four choices instead of just two. So, you know, what happens to an awakened person? Is what happens to them after death different than what happens to us? And please don't try to warm out of this question. Here's all four options. Say yes to one of these four. So the Buddha doesn't answer these questions. He's saying, you know, trying to concern yourself with these questions doesn't support this spiritual life. He's not saying they're not legitimate questions. He's not saying that they don't. You may not have them. He's saying that the way to freedom is not to follow the answers to these questions, instead to point towards direct experience. What can we know? What can we know now? What is, you know, I'm pointing to myself, we can feel in our bodies ways that, oh yeah, I feel more spaciousness, generous and relaxed if I behave in this way, if I do these things. I find myself with compulsive quick thinking if I do myself doing these things. Use this as a guide. Because we don't actually know for ourselves the answers to these questions. What happens to a Buddha after death? What happens to the life principle after death? Is the world finite or infinite? Is it going to end? Does it go forever? These aren't questions that we can answer for ourselves. We can have beliefs about them, and that's okay, as long as we hold them that this is my current understanding or this is my belief. But if we start holding on like, no, this is true, the world started this way, it's going to end that way, then that just sets up perfect conditions for to say, I believe this, you believe that, and now there's a conflict. Now we have to defend our beliefs. Now we have to put down their beliefs. Instead, we can just say, you know, this is my current thinking. This is how I'm holding it. Or, you know, I don't know. I don't know. And to just be okay, I don't know if the world's finite, if it started, if it ended. I don't know. I do know that when I say hello to my neighbor in the morning, I feel a little bit better. I feel like I'm going to have a better day, right? You know, that's like kind of something concrete and mundane. But our lives are filled with mundane things. So when I talked about this last week, I gave an example of how Agil had given us some questions to consider about this spiritual life. And I thought I would repeat those here. There's some questions to think about. Right, as a contrast to the ones that here's the Buddha saying, I'm not going to answer these. And maybe I'll say as an aside, next week I'll talk about somebody else went to the Buddha and asked these questions, and the Buddha gave a whole different response. So we'll talk about that a little bit next week. But this week, let's look at Gil, who I think very skillfully gave us some questions. So this was some homework that he gave. This is a number of years ago. It's part of Dharma practice days. Write up a list of 10 questions you have about Buddhism or about meditation practice. Try to come up with questions which have a direct bearing on how and what you practice. Of these 10 questions, write down the one that is most significant for you. And he gave some guidelines. Are you unclear, skeptical, or uncertain about any of the teachings? Are you ambivalent about some of the goals or the results of practice? Do you doubt your own ability to practice? Does this uncertainty affect how you practice? And in what ways might doubt interfere with your practice? So I thought that we could spend a little time here coming up with questions. They don't have to be your questions. They can be. They don't have to be. But theoretical questions. What are some questions people can have about practice? Teachings, teachers, and about ourselves. What are some questions that can fuel practice, that can help us to lean in to the practice instead of to lean out and hesitate and vacillate and just be unsure? What are some questions? Last week I shared that the question that I brought, the one that I had kind of narrowed down, was, does a person have to be a monastic? Do they have to ordain in order to be serious about this practice? Do I have to renounce absolutely everything? That was one that I brought. So now I'd like to hear, maybe we'll just be quiet just for a little bit, and we can think of what are some questions about practice that could help a person engage with practice. So maybe I'll share another one of mine. And then, Randy, can I ask? Yeah, you have the microphone. Great. Another one that I've had is the role of study versus meditation. Like, I didn't open this right, but I have the Majjhima Nikaya here. So what's the role? Do we need to know all these things that are in these books, or is it okay just to meditate? That's a question I've had too. Just offer that as an example. What are some questions you guys have had? Or you imagine that somebody else might have. It doesn't have to be your own, but what are the types of questions about practice?
Well, I had an observation about a question the other day. I think maybe it was last night. Yes, last night. Gil said that he was talking about the Four Noble Truths, and he said that constantly in his daily life, he thinks about whether an action or what he's doing is going to support the Four Noble Truths. And my question was, how in the world did he do that while he was also living his life? And it seemed remarkable that he could do that to me. And then this morning, you helped to elucidate that question, which I also found quite remarkable.
Thank you, Randy.
I also heard Gil's speech on the Four Noble Truths, as you did, and the Eightfold Path. But the question I have to you is, without knowledge, without this path, without any kind of when you have ignorance or not lack of knowledge, then it doesn't matter how good the path is, you'll never find it. And so the question maybe is, how do you dispel that? How do you make it so that you understand that part of it? Maybe that's not a good question, I don't know.
So the role of knowledge in finding the path, is that your question?
I think that a lot of times people go into a spiritual path, but then they're not sure why, or they're because they don't have the right knowledge. And then maybe this addresses what Buddha, why Buddha didn't want to answer all these questions, because they don't have the right knowledge, and then they kind of miss the path. It's not really a good question, sorry.
No, I think it is a good question. Just about what do we need in order to find the path? I think it's a great question.
Some of the questions I keep coming back to, one is direct awareness versus mindfulness. When to cultivate or be focusing on which, if that makes sense. One, maybe it's concentration versus mindfulness, might be another way to put it. And then a question I've been having, maybe this just this morning in reading something, which brings a lot of sadness, like a question I shouldn't be asking, but what is it that allows moments of awakening? To sustain themselves, but that's not quite the way to put it. What would allow me to rest in awareness? That would be a better way to put it, when I'm not able to. And then I guess this is just a process of discernment when I'm suffering and I'm aware that I'm creating my suffering, which is most of the time that I'm aware that I'm creating my suffering. How do I balance the direct awareness with the acknowledgement of the suffering itself?
These are great questions. The roles of different mental states, and how can we be present for difficulties, suffering, and how can we rest in some mental states? Yeah, these are great questions, Jan.
I'm not really sure I have a definite question, but it is definitely a dilemma I find myself in frequently in the past few months. You know, I feel like I have helped myself, have been helped a lot by being mindful in the moment and taking care and looking at things now and evaluating what it's doing to me and what I'm bringing to that moment. I find a lot of distress, you know, just listening to the news and getting upset and riled up and, like you said, looking at electronic gadgets and hearing things going on. And it's very disruptive, and then, you know, then of course anger steps in, right? So that's one of my dilemmas, how I've chosen, you know, to pay less attention to things on the that we get bombarded with, but then again, how can I stay informed too? So that's probably my dilemma, differentiating and dealing with the information that comes in such a way to be mindful. You know, I know it. I end up feeling like I want to take a more active, strong part, which is all well and good in itself, but there's still anger a lot behind it, you know. So just getting that balance, I think, is something I would look to for my practice. I mean, I know Buddha believed not to separate and isolate himself, certainly, from everything. You have to engage in life, and of course, I think that I personally feel that's why we're all here, to engage with our lives and our learning and other people's lives and learning. So, you know, it's just for me finding a balance and looking to mindfulness for this balance of going forward and being proactive and not having anger step into it. So, yeah. And something somebody else said earlier I thought was interesting, too, about not maybe getting all the information we need for here and now, but immediately that brought to mind the karma thing. Well, it keeps coming back to you so you can learn the lesson in the right time. And anyway, so maybe I just have to keep learning the lesson every single day. I look at
this is a great question. You know, how to find balance with things that are difficult or distressing, and how with things to take care of ourselves as well. Great question.
Excuse me. Well, one of the first things that I noticed was I was sitting here feeling very cold, and then you said, come up with a question, and all of a sudden I began to feel hot. Sort of intriguing body response, you know, to like kind of rising to a challenge, I think, in some ways. What came up was sort of the whole question about inadequacy or insufficiency. So as you've been speaking, you know, I've been sort of trying on like different jackets of sort of experience. I think what you just said has taken me somewhere. And it has to do with something called mood, because I'm aware that I got a lot of second arrow activity going on. And in many cases, I'm repeatedly stabbed myself, and I'm so, you know, the third arrow and the tenth arrow that you know, I look down at the ground and there's like all this bleeding. I mean, there was just, it's just a metaphor for getting freaked out, I guess, by that process. So having some clarity about it. But what you said about sort of the news and, you know, the way it creates a kind of a state. Well, there's a word, and mood is one of them, and even in some discussions between the Dalai Lama and a really famous psychologist on the subject of emotional awareness, I think it was Ekman, there's discussion about mood, and I just feel very aware that it's like an emotional set, you know, that I can find myself in this kind of state, and exiting is complicated, and I'm more focused now on the question of kind of like, could I find some motivation here? You know, that where that's the part that seems hard to get is maybe feeling like in a stuck state or a so I guess maybe my question resolves to, you know, does a kind of a gentle inquiry into how am I working today? Can that really, you know, be very helpful? Maybe as compared to meditation, and you have mentioned the, you know, as compared to other practices, and I'll say specifically, can it help to find motivation?
Yeah, I think this is a good question to kind of check in and see how we are. And then to check in, is there a way to maybe shift it, to shift how we are if we find that we're in a place, if we're stuck? So I really like this idea of questioning as part of practice. It also gets away from the idea that there's somebody out there who has all the answers. There's somebody over here who doesn't have the answers. All of us have questions. Is there something you want to say, Melanie?
I was thinking last week when you said the Buddha did not answer and he told the...
You may want to turn on the microphone, I think.
Turn on. It's on.
Oh, it is on. Okay.
So what you said last week and was just saying now, that nobody has all the answers. Buddha even knew he didn't have all the answers from what you were saying last week is the feeling I got, how he told the person, you know, and if you're too afraid to ask me, ask the people around you. And see, again, that's another one of my premises in life is that nobody has all the answers. And get somebody else's interpretation or somebody else's perspective and take on it because, you know, they've lived their life and learned and somebody else has learned their lessons in their life. I mean, we can learn so much from each other. And forgive me, I shouldn't make assumptions, but I would assume, it would seem that, you know, the Buddha knew. He didn't have all the answers because who does, right? And I'm not going to get in the cosmic question of who has all the answers. But anyway, there is so much to learn. There are absolutes maybe out there, but everybody has a different take on an interpretation. And there is so much to learn from each other.
Yes.
Each other's path is different. I mean, let's face it. Everybody's path is different.
Yes.
So, just seeking the answers where we can find them anyway.
Yeah, and not to get into the role of I'm just a person who doesn't know and just kind of like throwing up our hands and say, no, let's ask, let's engage. Yeah. And then as ending, I kind of want to honor something that Randy said last week about, I don't remember the exact words that you said, Randy, but it was something like that when you meet somebody, you have trust in them that what they're saying is true, and do we have to like be mistrustful of everybody and that they're not true? No, that's part of practice too, is kind of as being some openness and willing to learn from others and to realize, oh yeah, okay, this is what somebody thinks. It sounds reasonable to me. I don't have any reason not to believe it. But also to kind of like hold it provisionally or as opposed to saying this is the truth and then everybody else is wrong, anything else is wrong. So that's a way that we can meet things as well. So next week, as I said, we'll talk about how the Buddha had a different response when somebody else asked him these questions, as well as we'll talk a little bit about answering questions. So of course we're asking, but sometimes it's good to answer and like that, so... Thank you very much.